sense of comfort that makes your hand reach out for a familiar brand at the supermarket. And then there are those that brood on the horizon, the ones we hurry away from, fearing they will burst upon us, the jealousy that makes our fingers itch to search a loved one's pockets, or the shame that can goad us into self-destruction. Sometimes it feels more like we belong to our emotions than they to us. But perhaps it's only by paying attention to our feelings, by trying to capture them, as Constable did the clouds, that we can truly understand ourselves. What is an emotion? Deep inside each of our temporal lobes is a tear-shaped structure called the amygdala. Neuroscientists call this the command center of our emotions. It assesses stimuli from the outside world, deciding whether to avoid or approach. It triggers a clatter of responses, raising the heartbeat, instructing the glands to secrete hormones, contracting the limbs, or making an eyelid twitch. Recall a sad story or look at a picture of your newborn baby while lying in a brain scanner, and the amygdala will be one of the areas that will appear to light up on the resulting computer-generated image. With their glowing tapestries of magenta and emerald, studies of the brain can be seductive. They can even seem like the final word on how and why we feel the way we do. But to think of our emotions purely as biochemical fireworks in the brain is, in the words of the writer Siri Hustvedt, rather like saying that Vermeer's Girl Pouring Milk is a canvas with paint on it, or that Alice herself is words on a page. These are facts, but they don't explain my subjective experience of either of them, or what the two girls mean to me. More than that, I think, approaching emotions as first and foremost biological facts misrepresents what an emotion actually is. The invention of emotions. No one really felt emotions before about 1830. Instead, they felt other things, passions, accidents of the soul, moral sentiments, and explained them very differently from how we understand emotions today. Some ancient Greeks believed a defiant rage was carried on an ill wind. Desert-dwelling early Christians thought boredom could be implanted in the soul by malignant demons. In the 15th and 16th centuries, passions were not exclusive to humans, but could work their strange effects on other bodies too, so that palm trees could fall in love and yearn for one another, and cats become melancholic. But alongside this intangible realm of souls and supernatural forces, doctors also developed a complex approach to understanding the body's influence on the passions. Their insights were based on a theory of humoral medicine from the ancient Greek physician Hippocrates, which spread via the physicians of the medieval Islamic world and flourished ultimately in the writings of the court doctors of the European Renaissance. The theory held that each person had a balance of four elemental substances in their bodies: blood, yellow bile, black bile, and phlegm. These humors were thought to shape personality and mood. Those with more blood in their veins were quick-tempered, but also brave, while a dominance of phlegm made one peaceful but lugubrious. Physicians believed strong passions disrupted this delicate ecosystem by moving heat around the body and rousing the humors in turn. Rage sent blood rushing from the heart to the limbs, readying a person to launch an attack. Once black bile was heated, by contrast, it sent poisonous vapors curling up to the brain and crowded it with terrifying visions. Traces of these ideas still linger. It's why we speak of people being phlegmatic, or in an ill humor, or say their blood is boiling. The origin of our modern concept of emotion can be traced to the birth of empirical science in the mid-17th century. Thomas Willis, a London anatomist who dissected hanged criminals, proposed that a surge of joy or a nervous tremble was not the work of strange liquids and fumes,